to someone who might ask, how can I really live life to the full? How can I really taste it? Not in a selfish way, but really taste it as it's meant to be tasted. How can I live the good life? What answer might you give to that? It's an age-old question.
See who you really are. I think it's a case of the indirect approach. See, if I set out to be a halfway perfect human being, or even a fulfilled human being, or an all-round human being, or a human being that realizes his full potentialities as a human being, human potential, and I go for this directly, I think I'll make a mess of it. I'm sure I'll make a mess of it, comparatively. At least compared with the other indirect method, we see who I really am. And then I think as a byproduct, I shall be doing the best I can for the Douglas as a human being. And all round, I'd say whatever it is, I don't care what it is, the human goal or ideal will never be achieved in any sense of perfection, but I would say the best we can do, the best I can do for myself as a human being is to give up the attempt to be any sort of human being and see who I really am. And then as a human being, Douglas will still be woefully inadequate and imperfect, but at least he will be the best under the circumstances that can be managed.
But doesn't that sound like withdrawal and not facing the world?
Yes, it does. And try it and see whether it is withdrawal. I think in some cases it may look like withdrawal because we all have different functions. And some function best as behind the scenes, helping the world by something like prayer or awareness. Because their awareness is not separate from the world. The best you can do from the world is see who, for the world, is to see who you really are. And underground, this will affect everybody. And that is not withdrawal, that's really helping the world. But I would say that true seeing who you are will mean, if it's going to work properly, I'm sure it will mean helpful. It will mean helping the world, whether by quietly or in the forefront or by any kind of activity.
In what sense, if you could say a bit more about it, is seeing who you are helping all the world?
Well,
how can you value that? How can you prove that? Be sure of it.
Who sees who he is? That's the point. And if Douglas was seeing who he is, Douglas couldn't help the world by seeing who he is. But it's God seeing who he is.
Is seeing a recipe for joy?
No. It's sometimes a recipe for sadness, I sometimes feel. I think it's a recipe for a kind of stillness or rest, even a peace which is beneath joy and sadness, something which can't be disturbed, which Conan calls the steady, and which has no characteristics whatever. No, I think Ramana's right. What comes goes, and joy certainly comes and joy certainly goes. And sadness comes and sadness goes. And anything that is a positive feeling or quality is temporary. And seeing is a recipe for that which is not temporary, for seeing that which is not temporary.
What exactly is seeing who you are? What is it that you are doing?
I'm looking at what I'm looking out of. I'm turning my attention round 180 degrees from what I see, which currently is you, and seeing what is looking at you and seeing what is this side of your face. I'm seeing the absence here of a seer.
Sometimes I've heard you speak of seeing rather like one's relationship with a woman, that one needn't be thinking about a woman all the time, but it's the love for her is there all the time. Do you expand on that just a little?
Yes, not one's relationship with any woman, I mean with a rather special loved one, yes. I think what I was doing was trying to say that one never doubts one's love for a person if one spends lots of the time not thinking about that person. That person is loved underground, so to say, beneath the surface of current activities. The love, as it were, goes on, but not attended to in a direct or sharp way. Because of a commitment, because of, it's in the nature of this commitment, this love, that it shall underlie what you do, and it shall not be most of the time in the forefront. But it's there all the time on account of commitment.
Is conscious commitment important?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is. I think there's a great deal of difference between seeing who you are as a matter of some interest or help in time of need, and a dedication to this as central in one's life. There's a great difference. But the commitment is not on the side of the thing itself. The commitment is on the side of the human, really, and the mind. There's no commitment at the centre. The centre is free of commitment. But on the side of one's human self, there is a kind of orientation, a reorientation to who one is, which is extremely important and helpful.
Is work connected with seeing important? Work in the world?
Explain further what you mean.
Well, your life you spend talking about seeing, writing about seeing. And that is, in a very obvious way, connected with who you are. Would you say that to encourage dedication and to promote seeing, some kind of work is explicitly connected with seeing is necessary?
Not necessary, but certainly very helpful. I think one of my problems in life with my profession, with architecture, was that it was not directly related to seeing, and it was not really up my street. It was not what I wanted to do. It didn't help people see who they are. It was a drift of my main intention. And this means a kind of split, really. And I came to the conclusion there are lots of people who were very content to be good architects and make excellent architects as good as me or better. But there weren't too many people who were interested in who they were and showing other people who they were. Therefore, my real vocation was not in architecture. And I think that some of us have this passion, this gift, this dedication, and we would naturally seek, if possible, jobs, work, tasks which hopefully would earn us some money and give us a living of some kind, but would be directly related to seeing who we are. And then no danger of a split there. On the other hand, I'm not at all sorry about architecture. I think it was a pretty good context for me to work in and gave me certain skills and insights which were valuable. I think it all works out in the long run. And sometimes a job which may look very feeble and unconnected with seeing might be very necessary for it, although perhaps not directly, visibly connected with it.
Do you think it matters what one does in one's life?
Oh yes, I think it does. I think it does, but I think that if you really see who you are and follow that with all your heart, what you do in life will be just right. However seemingly non-right, it will really be right.
However seemingly unconnected, yes. Explicitly with seeing.
Yes, yes, I do. And I think it's mysterious, and I don't think it's a simple calculus of what is connected with seeing and what isn't. Because everything is really. And some people may need jobs, activities which are seemingly adrift from seeing. If for some mysterious reason, this part of them needs to be engaged in such work.
But you would say, on the other hand, nothing is separate from seeing.
Yes, I would.
Nothing is irrelevant.
Exactly, right. Yes. I mean, like Brother Lawrence working in the kitchen, you'd say, well, what has scraping pots and pans got to do with seeing God? But it was the best possible place it could be in, or practicing the presence of God, I guess.
Do you see yourself as a great man in the Western intellectual tradition, or the Western mystical tradition, or the world, or mankind's history?
Yes. Yes, I can't deny it. I do. It's a matter of faith, and it's not so much Douglas, great man, but what he has to say is so great, I can't say. And I think, you see, that one started off with an immense advantage of the work that had been done, and one is standing on the shoulders of scientists, of philosophers, of psychologists, of mystics, of saints, and therefore can see further and see more clearly. And this gives one a great advantage, and I can't deny it. And I think that some of the things I've written are clearer, better, perhaps more lasting, or at any rate more helpful than anything that's been written before. I really believe that. And it's a marvelous privilege to be given this work to do. And these things have been done through me, in spite of Douglas. More than because of him, perhaps, but I think they're very great. It isn't that Douglas is a great man, but he's given a great work to do. And I think the work is the greatest work to do. And it's not to say that in the future someone won't climb on, many people climb on Douglas's back and see a lot further. But I think up to date, this has drawn on so much. I mean, one's read and lived through so much of what has gone in the past into this way of thinking and feeling and believing, that no wonder one can put it together in the simple forms. In the future, the same thing will occur and one's work will be outdated in a way. But up to date, I would say, it's the clearest. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to do it. If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't have been able to, wouldn't have had the heart to do it. I must feel it's the best so far. And I do feel it's the best so far. And what's more, I think, and this has not been given to Douglas, it's been given to us, I think, the techniques, the upaya, the skillful means, the workshop exercises, and the pointers. Yes, I think the discovery we have made together over some years of pointers, vivid pointers, exercises, celebrations, experiments, is a leap, really, a leap in the history of man, the development of consciousness. Supremely important, and I think its importance will become more and more evident. And it's well before its time, and therefore slow to gain acceptance just because it's so strange. But the greatness of it, I have no doubt about. And it's not to say that Douglas is a great man, but he's been contrasted with a great work.
Do you see yourself comparable to such as Jesus or Buddha in terms of being a leader of a movement, to saying the truth?
Well, this is hard to say. I mean, what one has given and contributed may be taken up more effectively by others, and movement may be a very little thing to look at, but I don't think you can separate things out. Who will be the figurehead, who will take credit, who will eventually have the name, that I can never know. And I don't want to know really, and don't care about.
But do you see this as the beginning of a movement?
Well, I don't say it's the beginning of a movement, because the movement's been going on. The movement has been going on for about 2,000 years. No, I would say it's a continuation with some very new and valuable differences of something that's been going on for a long, long time. But this has elements that are new and elements of fantastic greatness.
Such as the workshop techniques.
And this is the thing. I mean, in one sense, and in the most fundamental sense, one's saying nothing new whatever. It's all old hat. It's all well known. It's the perennial philosophy. It's been around for 2,000 years. And what is new, what is fantastic, and what is great is the demystification of it, the simplification of it, the shedding of religious, ritualistic, creedal complications, the universalizing of it, above all, the expressing of it in simple language, in childlike language, the pointers which are so direct, so inescapable, and more particularly, I think the greatness of it is that here, for the first time, we have science to reinforce, to back up, to enrich this thing, so that not only is there no contradiction between science and essential insight, but they're the same thing. They tend in the same direction, as we can see in the onion peeling exercise. And this refreshment, this enlivening of the mystical tradition with science seems to me to be a very precious and beautiful thing. I think the essence is unchanging in all the worlds, in all the universes and all the galaxies. The essence is absolutely the same, but quite obviously in the unfolding of means to appreciate that essence, there are also great steps, there are great leaps, there are bridges crossed, there is a great history of the means, such as the Zen koan, such as sitting meditation, etc., such as worship and singing and ritual. There are great steps, there are great methods, and this is where the greatness comes in.
Do you see seeing as being something that will become ordinary for everyone on earth, or most people on earth?
Well, see, the history, the future of seeing is not terrestrial only, and I am unable to say whether this planet has a bright future. It's quite possible that the gloomy foretellers of doom, whether by war, disease, famine, pestilence, belting of the ice cap, shift of the Earth's axis, and 100 other sorts of damages. It's not for me to say whether the prophets of doom aren't and right, and we will be destroyed or destroy ourselves as a species. But this is, the Earth is only, no doubt, a tiny local incident in the great story. But the great story I have every confidence in, exactly what this Earth's future is going to be, that's heavy.
Do you think it would be an enormous encouragement towards a renaissance of man if that did happen, however, if man did as a whole?
I very much believe that. I very much believe that. And if there is a next step on, there's a next step from this, I'm sure, whether here or elsewhere, and the next step from our present kind of consciousness is to the new kind of consciousness, which is turned round. The three stages of consciousness being, to me, very clear. One, the first being living unconsciously from who one is, such as the consciousness of the animal and the infant, overlooking one's presence. And the second stage is looking at oneself as an object from outside. And the third stage, which hopefully is now coming up, we see precursors of it, and we are here to develop, and that is not overlooking one's presence, but seeing one's absence. And that involves, as I said before, number two, which is being very aware of oneself as an object also, not denying one's humanity, one's objective reality, and limitation.
Do you think there's a possibility that workshops might harden into some kind of organization similar to the Christian Church?
I should think it's almost inevitable. And somebody would have to come along sooner or later and say, to hell with this paperback rubbish, let's get back to who we are. Because once it was real, now it's become a formality. And I think this has happened with absolutely everything. It will happen with every precious thing we have. And we have no recipes against this natural history of skillful means, that they have their day and they work through and they become dead, and somebody has to come along and see through them to the reality and devise new means, perhaps inject life into the old, simplify them, because they will have become formalized, they would have become ritualized, holy, meaningless. And I think this happens. It could be that they could be revivified without destroying them, but they certainly, if they survive at all, will suffer this deterioration. Like an organism growed, and then you have to have the new life.
Do you think the void will, however, carry on producing new techniques?
I'm absolutely sure of it. I think it's a great delusion to think that we've got these things together and they are the last word, they're the end, and the void has really shot its boat. I think I would say it's infinite. We've got infinite pointer thrills, creative avenues to its own nature waiting to display themselves.